This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
The term NIMBYism has been around for a long time. It's usually associated with a community taking a defensive position to oppose a project in their area that they might not oppose if it were elsewhere. The project could be anything that was perceived as being unpleasant or dangerous. In the 1980s, activists started promoting an antidote to being a NIMBY. You could be a YIMBY, saying, yes, in my backyard. And now the Pivot Legal Society has launched a new YIMBY kit to help you become a YIMBY and to embrace and support housing projects in your community. I'm joined by Darcy Bennett. She's the campaign director at Pivot Legal Society. Good morning, Darcy.
Good morning.
It seems like I should have heard that term YIMBY a long time ago, yet it's actually new to me. What was the context in which you started thinking about countering NIMBY with YIMBY?
Well, it was new to us as well when we found it. So we wish we could take credit for it, but we can't. We were actually got interested in this as the heat shelters sort of went up in Vancouver. And it was something that we'd been fighting for a long time. We realized that there were so many people who were outside during the cold winter months and that, obviously the answer is social housing and not shelters in the long term, but in the short term, people need to be taken care of. And so we were really excited when council and the province got together and we really saw this commitment to bringing people in off the streets, which is just such an important starting point. And it's actually sometimes easy to live in a bit of a bubble where you're talking to people who all are really focused on that goal. Let's get people inside. Like, let's make people safe. And so we were quite shocked by the level of opposition to those shelters, particularly the shelters that weren't in the downtown east side. Now, the city's approach to putting shelters up was to think about where people were actually sleeping outside. And that's something we can talk about a little bit later. There's a little bit of a chicken and an egg issue where a lot of times NIMBY responses come around like, oh, we're going to pull these people to our community, when in actuality, most times when a project goes up, it's because there is a need and that community groups are coming in to respond to that need, or city officials or whoever it is coming in to respond to that need. So in 2009, it was as the heat shelters were bringing people in, actually a couple of them ended up closing early because of the amount of community opposition. And it wasn't something we were really thinking about. We were thinking about, okay, we've got people inside, now let's start thinking about the long-term housing strategy. And then we found ourselves sort of dealing with this fight to keep the shelters open, which wasn't what we were expecting. And so we started sort of looking around, and we've heard all these arguments before, other people must have thought about that. And we came across a group in Toronto called the Homecoming Coalition, and they had put together this fabulous YIMBY toolkit. And we sort of credited them with the term, but when we started to look around, we see it actually goes back to the late 80s. And we thought, wow, this is what we need in Vancouver. We need to bring this sort of organized movement to open up these projects, to address some of these concerns to Vancouver. And so that's what we were trying to do with the kit.
So why did you decide specifically to produce a kit that you could then hand out to people who are interested?
Well, for a few reasons. One reason is that we're a legal organization and we do a lot of work that maybe not everyone in the community can do, taking people to the Residential Tenancy Board, human rights work. But what we were seeing going on with the shelters was really a community discussion, and it wasn't necessarily about an outsider coming into a community and saying, no, this is the right thing to do, you need to have this shelter. It was really about empowering people within every community to stand up and take an active role, and that's a piece of it. Yes, we need to rely on governments to provide money, we need to rely on service providers maybe to run these operations, but all of us have a role to play. And so it was really empowering people. One thing that we realized, like sort of through our research and discussion, is that oftentimes when someone's really opposed to a project, they'll come out and speak out about it, they'll go out and organize their neighbors, and they're using a range of tools to do that. And so we wanted to make those tools available to people who maybe, you know, were sort of passively supportive or, you know, weren't thinking too much about it because they were like, great, why would I need to get involved in this? It's happening. And so we looked at the kit in Toronto, and that was one thing we were going to do, is just sort of export that over. But we realized there was a bunch of really key differences. And one of the key differences was Toronto's ward system. And that really plays out in terms of how some of these sort of NIMBY-YIMBY battles play out in that community, because there's a particular person on council who's being lobbied, and there's competition among councillors to keep their constituents happy, and we don't really have that here. So that was quite different. Our human rights code's also a bit different here, and we do get into the human rights code in the kit. But the other thing was the homecoming kit really focused on the service providers and what they could do to work with communities, which is a really important piece that I'll talk about. But we really wanted to sort of do both. We really wanted to be a resource to people who are maybe thinking about putting in a project. And it was so interesting when we were doing the research, because the range of projects that people were opposed to, it wasn't just homeless shelters, it wasn't just sort of transitional housing. It was everything from needle boxes and, you know, harm reduction stuff to family housing to community gardens even.
Wow.
And so really letting people grab those tools for themselves and make their community their own. And I think that's the core of YIMBYism.
Now, the toolkit provides a framework for going from NIMBY to YIMBY, or mm-hmm. from maybe from neutral to YIMBY. What give me a sort of a bird's eye view of the kit. What are some of the resources in it?
So
you mentioned a few already, but
mm-hmm. So the kit is sort of divided up into three sections, and the first section is really just sort of a bit of an overview of NIMBYism and like the philosophy behind YIMBYism. And one thing it does is it really addresses some of the very common concerns that people bring up over and over again, whether it's diminishing property values or crime or not a good fit for our neighborhood. So how to sort of hear those concerns and address them. It provides some research around that's been done locally and internationally around things like property values, around things like satisfaction once a project's actually in.
You guys call it myth busting, right?
Myth busting is what we call that. And then it also provides a bit of a framework in terms of like what is actually the human rights framework around that. So one thing we talk about is that you can't zone people. There's really good reasons for communities to get involved in planning processes, everything from traffic concerns to density concerns. And those are all reasonable things that communities should be getting involved in. Like, that's actually a really important piece of participatory democracy and community building. But when we get into the territory of zoning people and saying, I don't want any of these kinds of people, or there's too many of these kinds of people, that's when we start to sort of bump up against the human rights framework that...
You've got this great thing in there called the cringe test. Talk about that.
And the cringe test is something we did borrow from Toronto. And what the cringe test does is sort of, it's a sort of a bit of a cognitive game that you can play with yourself or with people that you're working with around how would this sound if I put it a little differently? So we already have too many services for the Chinese community in our neighborhood. Would make most of us a little bit uncomfortable, but we already have too many services for the mentally ill, often kind of rolls off the tongue a little easier and feels a little more legitimate. And we also go back historically and look at actually that was really common. Several decades ago, that wouldn't have maybe made people cringe. So trying to push ourselves and get over some of that fear and think about what bringing diversity into communities has done, and then thinking about that, pushing ourselves forward.
And then the toolkit then give some tools, like if you're in a situation where you mm-hmm. recognize discrimination is sort of part of the NIMBYism around a project, what can people do there?
So I think part of it is arming people with information. People are emotional, and they're right to be emotional about their communities. And so one of the things we really emphasize in the kit is trying to meet people where they're at and not polarize the discussion. Acknowledge people's concerns, but we provide some information about everything from property values to crime rates and what it means actually to bring people inside and make people a little bit more comfortable in their lives and what that can do for communities. We also provide some sort of frequently asked question help. We provide templates for writing to everyone from a neighborhood group maybe that's organizing against a project to city council to express your support to the media to respond maybe to a media story that you think maybe portrays some myths and how to respond to those things. We also talk a lot about the planning process, the city planning process, and the city was actually really helpful in that and where you can get involved, where are those sites you can get involved.
I love the part where there was a flow chart through a very clear flow chart through that. It wasn't a confusing one. It was mm-hmm. just like here's how yeah. it works. Insert yourself here.
We had actually a fabulous volunteer working with us. She was an anthropology student from SFU, and there was nothing like that on the city site. And we were both staring at these documents, and we were really confused. We're like, I don't know how this works. And she spent a good month trying to distill it down and then running it by a person in social planning being like, is this right? And so we were actually really pleased with that at the end because it made it clearer for us. Yeah. So I hope it does for other people.
Yeah, it's great. Now, the kit also has some, it has some what you call case studies in there. Mm-hmm. I would call them stories. What mm-hmm. Tell us about some of them and what they tell us.
So the stories that we have in there are really looking at cases that have gone poorly and have gone well in different communities. And I think one of the greatest learnings for us through this was that it's not just that there's these sort of bad NIMBYs who don't get it and they're ignorant over here, and then the sort of service providers and YIMBYs who get it and are compassionate, that there's a real dialogue that needs to happen. And that's what really came out through the stories. So one story in there is around the Union Gospel Mission and their new project in Strathcona. And one thing that they found was that they had such a strong vision of what they needed to do. There was so much suffering. There were so many people who needed help. We need to build this project and get people inside. And neighborhood opposition was massive. And Vancouver is an interesting city. This is a bit of an aside because we've got sort of two forms of NIMBYism sort of competing against each other. We have neighborhoods that maybe don't have a lot of services for low-income people or marginalized people saying, like, we need to keep our neighborhoods safe, property values, all these things, and sort of like, this doesn't belong here. It belongs in the downtown east side. And we have people in neighborhoods like Strathcona that are on the border of the downtown east side who are saying, we already have too many services here. They need to be spread out. So we do case studies from both angles. But Union Gospel Mission actually went back to the drawing board and decided they really need to engage the community and did something called a good neighbor agreement, where they really sat down with the community and like, these are the things we can do for you to make this a little bit feel better and address some of these concerns, but this project's going to go ahead because it's needed, and to really create that integration. And in every case study, one thing that came out was just having someone people could talk to, and that, you know, they didn't feel like they're just seeing this big planning placard. You know, we've all seen the sort of billboards and it's this thing that you can't interface with, but really being there, taking people's phone calls, like giving an individual's phone number so they know that when there's a problem, I can, you know, call this person and they're going to talk to me and I have a relationship, and that's really important. We also talk about a Rain City project that was up on Fraser Street that had a lot. It was probably the best example of going from NIMBY to YIMBY. It was really powerful, actually, because there was a lot of opposition to the housing project that they were going to put in. And they really worked putting together a community advisory panel and just bringing the community members in at every possible juncture and really having someone who was there to answer people's questions. And in the end, when the project went up, lots of people just think it's private condo housing and like ask if it's renting when they walk past. But also relationships have really been built. So now some of their residents neighbors come to them to hire them to do yard work. And there's just this real relationship, and it actually is building community for everyone. And when there has been problems, because there often are problems no matter what kind of housing goes in, that there's someone who's there and deals with it right away, and people can really feel heard.
So it kind of sounds like, although we might think of YIMBY as being sort of oppositional to NIMBY, in a way it's actually just sort of activating sort of other values that people have and trying to sort of create a bridge or a dialogue between them seems like an important part of it.
Yeah.
Rather than kind of going head to head necessarily.
Yeah. Going head to head isn't particularly effective. Sometimes it has to go that way. Sometimes things get incredibly polarized. We have one case study from Coquitlam where the RCMP actually had to be brought in because things were getting so violent because people were so opposed to the homeless shelter. And that was really one of those examples where they're trying to put in a homeless shelter because there were homeless people in Coquitlam, not because they wanted to draw people there. But in most cases, people care about their neighborhoods. It's where their family is. Their home is their biggest investment, oftentimes. And so giving space for people to voice their concerns without feeling shut down. And that oftentimes when people raise their concerns or say, like, we have this concern about this project over here, actually bringing those into early in the planning stage can actually create a better project that's going to work better for everyone, for the staff, for the clients, and for the community. So actually, wherever possible, trying to bring that in. And one of the things we sort of talk about is just consult early and often. So there's sort of the planning process and these places where you have to consult and this geographic band you have to consult within. But anything you can do to push outside of that and let people feel a part of it from the beginning and know that their concerns will be heard really can help.
Who's the kit for?
So the kit, so it had that first component, then it has two sort of sections, and one is for individuals, and one is for organizations that might be trying to develop a project. A lot of crossover, but slightly different angles. And so the kit is really for people who may support a project, but maybe didn't feel like they needed to go out and express their support, or they were just... because they didn't have this like overwhelming emotional reaction to it. They're just like, oh, that's a good thing. They might not go out and get involved. So it's really trying to impress upon people how important it is to get that voice and to make sure that council, when they're making decisions, have a full picture of the neighborhood. But it's also aimed at people who might be a little more active, but really feel like, oh, there's this strong organized movement and how am I going to go up against that? And really giving them tools to organize, to feel confident, to speak out. So it's anyone from, someone who might be on a parents advisory council at their school and the school's concerned about a project and they want to sort of bring that dialogue and that perspective to people who are maybe more active in their community, to people who are just a little uncomfortable maybe with what they're reading in the newspaper, hearing on the radio and just want to, write a letter to the editor or write a letter to city council or send an email showing their support, because all that stuff matters. And it's really about telling people your voice matters, and if you want to go a little further, here are some tools for bringing your neighbors together. And they're sort of basic community organizing tools no matter what the issue was.
Well, it's been great talking with you this morning, and I point people to the website so they can actually take a look at the kit themselves and maybe find out ways that they can use it in their community.
Great, thank you.
Thanks for coming in. I've been speaking with Darcy Bennett of the Pivot Legal Society, and you can find an electronic version of the kit on their website at pivotlegal.org. You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.